Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. And I am excited to be able to talk to you about marketing malpractice. We're going to do a two-part series about marketing malpractice. The first part that we're talking about today is called Marketing Malpractice, Understanding the Job That Needs to Be Done. So basically, we're going to go into how it is that you as a business owner, if you're the one doing marketing or if you're hiring a marketing firm, how they can understand the job that needs to be done. The conversation today or the podcast topic today is based on a white paper that was written by Clayton Christensen, Scott Cook, and Taddy Hall. And it's based on this white paper they've written about marketing malpractice. And I wanted to just kind of go over some of the information in it over the next two episodes, just so that you can get clear on how you can position your business, whether you have a product or service-based business, to succeed. However, before we get into the show, if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you click the subscribe and then the bell notification so that you can know when new business tips come out and when new episodes of The Common Sense Show comes out. If you're listening to this on your Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast, make sure you subscribe so you can also figure out when new episodes drop once a week. But before we get into our episode today, I'm Michael Logan. This is The Common Sense Show.
You're listening to The Common Sense Show, the game-changing podcast dedicated to helping entrepreneurs and small business owners grow past $200,000 in revenue by building rock-solid systems, processes, and operational strategies. Host Michael Logan delivers impactful interviews and insights to help you level up and grow your bottom line. Here's your host, Micah Logan.
All right, so we have a good one for you. And today we're just talking about marketing malpractice, understanding the job that needs to be done. So as I mentioned in the open, we are going to talk about exactly how you can understand what the job your business actually does is. And as we're going through and stepping through some of this information, it's pretty high level information. So if you have to go back and rewind and then listen again and write notes, it's fine. But I'm going to deliver some really high impact information for you that you should take notes on, because when we finish with this two-part episode, you will be able to understand the job of your business and how it plays in the marketplace. And I have some notes here, but this conversation, as I mentioned earlier, is based off the white paper that was written by Clayton Christensen at Harvard Business School. He's now a deceased. He died in January 2020. But let's get cracking. So 30,000, that's the amount of consumer products every year that are launched into the marketplace. However, those 30,000 consumer products have a failure rate of 90%. 90%, 9 out of 10 consumer products that launch every single year fail. Services, probably slightly less, but products, 90% of them fail on an annualized basis. And this is even after having people who consider themselves to be marketing professionals attached to companies who launch products into the marketplace. This is also after hiring people who are experts who are trying to make sure that when you go to market with the products that they can succeed, these products are still failing. So what is wrong with the picture? You have these marketing experts that are telling you that your product or service is high level and should be successful in the marketplace, but yet there's this massive failure rate. So clearly there's a disconnect between what the market perhaps researches know or don't know and what the consumers actually want. So we're going to talk about how to close that gap and what you can possibly do. So one of the things that you need to recognize is that when you're building a brand, the goal is that you want it to draw this straight line from who you are as a business or what product you offer as a business to what your customer actually wants. But here's the problem. In the white paper, Christensen makes an interesting statement that oftentimes marketers or market researchers or market experts miss the mark when it comes to identifying exactly what their customers are looking for. And so he starts off by talking about a man by the name of Theodore Levitt, who was a marketing professor at Harvard, who told his students that people don't want to buy a quarter-inch drill. They want a quarter-inch hole. So they're not looking for the quarter-inch drill. They're looking to make a quarter-inch hole. And it's not like marketers don't agree with this particular segment. But yet and still, when you go to, I don't know, Home Depot or Lowe's, why is it that oftentimes drills and products and things like this are often segmented by drill type or drill bit or the features of the drill and the product themselves? Let me tell you, it doesn't make it any easier. And maybe you have actually been a subject to this yourself. You go to Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever you go and get your hardware supplies, and you walk in there, and despite having all the choices in the world of a product to buy, you still don't necessarily buy one because you don't know which one can suit your needs. However, when you actually see perhaps the end cap, where there's a product displayed that looks like it's in action and actually making a hole, you may be more likely to buy that one. Well, why is it? Why is that? Well, that's because that company is doing a great job of connecting what you're looking to do with what the actual product itself is. And so oftentimes when market researchers begin the process of trying to understand how to launch a market, launch a product or service in the marketplace, or improve a product or service in the marketplace, they often start to segment their customer base in the geographic area. And they start to segment customers. You've seen this all by age, demographic, by where they live, how much money they have, by gender, whatever the case is. And so they take all the information and then they divide up the customer into multiple segments. That's typically the prevailing method of segmentation. And that this is exactly what new marketers learn when they're in business school. However, there may be a different point of view. And this is something that Christensen talks about in this white paper that we could take if you're trying to look at how to actually improve your marketing appeal in the marketplace. And so one of the ways is to think about your customer is not necessarily, okay, who is this person and how much money do they have? How old are they? But instead, you should think of the structure of the market from the customer's point of view. And they typically have a very simple point of view. They just need to get things done. So as an example, we talked about drilling the hole. It doesn't matter if you're on a DIY project and you're at home trying to build a shelf, or you're trying to renovate your garage or something on the weekends, then you're only looking to drill a hole or staple something, and you just know that you need it stapled, right? So what's the first thing you do before you go to the, we'll continue on this line of thought of the hardware store. What's the first thing you think about when you are, for instance, tiling a floor and you run out of grout? You don't say to yourself, oh, what kind of grout exactly? There are different kinds, millimeters, thicknesses, blah, blah, blah. You say to yourself, I need more grout. It's very simple. I'm tiling. I'm running out of grout. I need more. And then you go get it. What is the job that you need to get done? And so before you actually go and buy a product or take a service, you're thinking about the job that you need to actually get done. So marketers' task is to understand what jobs periodically arise that your product or service can actually fill. Now, if you think about this question, it's actually a deeper question than you might think. Because if you're in an industry or you have a service that is not naturally apparent of what kind of job people are looking for, then you have to think about why it is that people patronize your business. Now, we're going to talk about something that I've mentioned oftentimes, which is surveying your customers to see why they patronize your business. This is why this topic of why do people buy from you constantly come up when we're talking about creating services that people want in your business. This is because if you can understand why they're actually there, then you can give them more of what they want based off of what you're providing. If you can understand the job, then you can design not just the product or service for it, but also the associated experiences that come along with purchasing something that can actually do the job. And the problem right now is that most people don't even think about this. Now, you may say to yourself, for instance, that, well, let's say in my case, I own training studios. So you may say to yourself, well, it's just exercise. So a person is just coming in to you to exercise. Well, is that all they want? When you go to our website, that's not exactly what it says. On our website, because we do small group personal training, no more than four members to one coach, they go to our website and it says, why be one of 30? Why not be one of four? Already, we're driving home the point that we want them to, number one, experience what it's like to have more personalized attention. This is without telling them that they're going to get personalized attention, just implying that by how you change the numbers of people who are actually being served in that particular session. But beyond that, oftentimes people who are just starting out in fitness don't know what to do. They sign up at the gym, they go a couple of times, and the reason why they don't come back is because they have no clue over what to do. This is why oftentimes that those individuals don't actually stay or last even in training clubs where there's actually a bunch of people because they get lost. So how do you narrow that gap? Well, you have to show someone that you are providing for them the ability to understand what they're going to do right off the bat and that you can create a roadmap that brings them in, almost indoctrinates them into the feeling of community. You bring them in and have this feeling that they are a part of something, that they're going to be instructed, that they're going to get these things, but also that they're not going to be left by yourself. Repeatedly on our website, and maybe I would say 15 times, we write, you are not alone. Because the job that they're hiring you to do is to not be alone. That's really what they're looking for, in my case. In the case of a product, they're hiring this product for to make a hole. And so you can say, well, this drill has, you know, variable speed action and a diamond tip and all this other stuff, but can it make the hole that I would like it to make? Now, there was an interesting thing that has come up in the white paper about someone who made a product. His name was Scott Cook in the mid 1990s, and he presided over the launch of a product called Quicken Financial Planner. Now, you may have heard the company Quicken. They do a lot of stuff in finance. They're still around, but they had this financial planner that could be used. And here's the thing. The goal of Quicken Financial Planner was actually a very altruistic and good goal. It was to help families basically create a retirement plan. But it flopped. Now, why would something that could actually help families create retirement plans flop? Before we talk about that, you should know that that product was actually the top of its category. It was number one in the market. And even though it was number one in this market, and it captured over 90% of the market, it never grew past $2 million in revenue. And eventually it was pulled from the market. How is it possible for something to pull 90% of the market, never pass $2 million in the market, and is actually useful? Could it have been the price tag? Well, you might say, yeah, it could have been the price tag. It was $49 a month. Was that too high? Who knows? Is it possible that the financial tool that financial planner was too complicated to use? Maybe. But did anyone ever stop and ask if the families that would use a financial retirement plan actually do the work of designing their own retirement? Was that what they were actually looking for? Or were they just simply looking, they understood that they needed to work in their retirement and perhaps they needed assistance from someone else? You see, that was a job that that family probably wasn't ready to do. After working 40 hours a week or more, after raising children in the household, after engaging with the outside world and all the household responsibilities on top of secular responsibilities, they weren't ready to also add on top of that being a financial planner for themselves. So that was a job that they did not want to hire. So this could have been the primary reason why that product actually failed. Now, the other piece is that they couldn't even find enough people to use the software in the focus group. And that should have told them already that that product wasn't going to be that successful in the marketplace. So you see what the point is here? The point is that if you get the job of your product or service wrong, and you don't understand why customers actually want to hire your product or service to do the job that they're looking for, then you could be missing the mark, and it could be why your marketing is struggling. It could be why your marketing messaging is struggling. It could be why you're not getting as many people with the level of sophistication that you want either. And it also, you should think about it, does it have some bearing on where your business is located? Well, it certainly should. Why would you put a business in the area where people don't actively use, regularly hire the service of the business? It doesn't make sense. So it should inform not only where you locate your business, but also the things that you do to put in your business. So there was an example that they gave about this whole idea. And it's important that, so this is something that I want you to write down. With a few exceptions, every job that people need or they want to hire a product or service for, it has to fill one of three roles. It has to be social, functional, and an emotional dimension. So it has a social function, it has a social dimension, it has a functional dimension, and it has an emotional dimension. And if your marketing or if your marketing firm is actually representing you, then it's important for marketers to understand each of those dimensions: social, functional, and emotional. In other words, the job, not the customer, is a fundamental unit of analysis for a marketer if you're trying to develop products or services that a customer will buy. You have to understand and precisely target to why a person buys something and tie that into a social, functional, or emotional dimension as to why they're buying it. Now, there's an example that they gave in the white paper about a fast food restaurants. They were trying to improve the sales of milkshakes. So in this particular instance, the marketers first tried to define the market segment by the product itself. So they're trying to figure out, was the milkshake not thick enough? Was it not chocolatey enough, chunky enough? Was it cheap enough? Would it satisfy them better? They were thinking in terms of actual attributes of the milkshake and whether that, by changing attributes of the actual milkshake itself, would that improvement drive sales? So what happened is after changing the constitution of the milkshake a few times, nothing happened. Had absolutely no impact on sales. And so a new researcher came and spent a long day in the restaurant trying to understand the job that the customers were trying to get done, what we're talking about today, and what they hired a milkshake to do. And now when that researcher, when he chronicled each milkshake that was bought and what other products the customer purchased and whether they were alone in the group or whether they consumed the entire milkshake on premises or drove off with it, he found out that 40% of all the milkshakes that were purchased were purchased early in the morning. And most often, the early morning customers were alone and they didn't buy anything else. And they drank their milkshakes in the car. And then he left with that information that 40% of the customers that came in to buy milkshakes did so in the morning. They were alone. They drank it in the car. He returned to interview the morning customers because that's where the bulk of the milkshakes at that particular time were coming from, that time slot. And he interviewed the morning customers as they left the restaurant with their shake in their hand to try to figure out what caused them to hire this milkshake. And most of them actually bought the milkshake, that product, to do the same job. And what was it? Well, they all had long, boring commutes in the car. And they weren't hungry yet, but they knew they would be by about 10 a.m. And so they wanted to eat something now that would keep them from getting hungry later. And they were also in a hurry. And they oftentimes only had a free hand when they were in the car. So they knew they were going to be hungry. They had to get in the car. They had a long commute and they had a free hand. So the researcher continued to dig down on this. And he said, tell me about a time when you were in the same situation, but you didn't buy a milkshake. What did you buy instead? And he said, he learned that they bought a bagel, but the problem was that the bagels were too dry. And bagels with cream cheese or jam resulted in sticky fingers. And then they got all that nastiness on the steering wheel, which I don't blame them for not wanting to do that. But sometimes these customers bought a banana. The problem is the banana went fast and then it didn't stave off hunger long enough. And then oftentimes this was the same case for people who bought donuts. They ate it, but it still didn't stave off the hunger long enough. And the milkshake, though, was different. It was thick. It was viscous. And it took 20 minutes for them to finish the whole thing because they sipped it slowly. They played with the cup. They slowly sucked on the straw. And they didn't have the crumbs that a bagel had or a donut. The steering wheel didn't get all gooey. And then they also realized that after they drank it, that not only did all they have to do is throw the cup out when they got to work, but they were also full throughout the day. And that was an interesting take. These people were buying milkshakes because they could fiddle with the straw. They could slowly drink it down. It filled them up in their stomach and it didn't make a mess. Now, other times of the day, the researchers observed that parents often bought milkshakes in addition to meals for their children. So what were the parents trying to do? Well, they were completely exhausted from having to say no to their kids. And they basically hired the milkshakes in order to just give in to their kids, basically, and feel like loving parents. But what the observer realized was that the milkshakes didn't do a good job with this because he saw patients waiting after they had finished their meals and the kids were struggling to suck the thick, viscous milkshake up through the straw. And however, customers were hiring milkshakes for two different very jobs. But when the marketers originally had asked customers who hired a milkshake for either of both jobs or what attributes they would improve, the responses they got from the customers It all depended on what the customer's role was. You see, the thick milkshakes work for the morning customer because they needed that thickness and to slowly to melt down during the commute. And they liked that thickness because they can kind of play with it. It distracted them. But the parents later on in the evening got annoyed by it because it was taking too long for them to leave the restaurant. So this just comes back to our original point, which was that it's important for you not to just take the mean or the median of all the customers in the area and say, this is exactly what my customer wants from my product or service, and I can satisfy that with this one product. You have to go deeper. You have to understand why the person is hiring your product or service. What is going on in their life that they're looking for you to come in and to take care of that job. Now, once it became clear what improvements that they could make to the milkshake and how that would get the jobs done even better, what was in the milkshake became basically irrelevant. So here's the thing. What they did was they created different ways to deliver the milkshake, which made the engagement of the milkshake a lot better. So what they tried to nail down the social, functional, and emotional dimensions of the milkshake in order to make it more appealing to individual. And so it wasn't individuals who were buying it. So it wasn't until they nailed the social, functional, and emotional dimensions that it actually made it better. And so how did they do that? Well, the restaurant chain decided to move the milkshake machine in front of the counter so that customers could just swipe their card and they can just come in, dash, and go without getting stuck in the drive-through lane. And that was one way that they could have. So they have 40% of their customers that were buying the milkshakes coming in the morning, but these people had to go to work. So standing in long lines outside in the drive-through and inside wouldn't work. So they would position these machines so that they can come in, swipe the card, fill the cup, and leave. And that's what they did. What they also did was they made sure that they didn't make the milkshake so thick that the child couldn't suck the milkshake up in the straw, causing that frustration with the parents. Changed the formula slightly, so it made it slightly easier to go up, but not too thin, and then make it easier for the other segment of people to buy the milkshake and leave. This is how you create a winnable target for your business. This is how you create an innovative solution to a job that customers want to hire your business to do. And this is how you have to start thinking. So here's a question for you. I'm going to leave you with for this podcast. How can you create a social, emotional dimension, a social, emotional, and functional dimension to what you do? Do you understand what they are? I want you to think about that. Here's your homework for next time I see you. Write down the word social. What parts of your product or service are social? How can you improve on those to give a person who's hiring your job or your product what they want? What part of your product or your service is functional? Write down the aspects of the functional piece of your product or service so that people who are trying to work with your business, whether you're a service or product-based business, can engage in to hire them to satisfy the job that they want as well. And then what are the emotional aspects of what you do that helps keep a person calm or excites them or gets them revved up or engaged and ready to tell others that your business delivers to people that you want to get across to them as to why they hire your business and how to do it. So I told you that you probably have to rewind this episode because there's a lot here today. and it goes really, really deep. But fundamentally, I want you to think about this. When you're looking to move into a new area, or you're trying to deliver a high level of service, what is it that people hire your business to do to satisfy for them? And how can you deliver for them a social, functional, and emotional result so that they can improve their lives and their experience with doing business with your company? In next podcast, we're going to talk about how you can create a purpose brand. Now, creating a purpose brand, this is part two of this topic, is the result of putting all this stuff together. A purpose brand is a brand in which people buy products or services and can hire them to perform the jobs. So once you understand those three aspects of your business and what people are hiring your business to do, then you can create a brand that people want to continue to engage in so they can continue to get the same result from doing business with you, whether they're buying your product or your service. Super deep episode, but very clear on intent about how to position your brand in the marketplace. So this may have been slightly confusing for you in some respects, but hopefully not. The point is that you need to be clear in the marketplace as to what you deliver to your customers, but you have to be even more clear about what exactly your customers are giving you money for. Don't think it's just for your service that you're giving them, that they're giving you money for, or your product. It could be for another purpose that they're giving it to you. Let's say that you own a wig shop. Are people who buy wigs from you buying it because they want to cover their bald heads? Or are people buying wigs from you because as a woman, they feel more feminine and they feel like people look at them differently when they're wearing a wig, and that has an effect on their self-esteem? Think about that. Until next time, use the common sense in your business and your business will grow. But before we say we're out, don't forget to subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, click the notification bell, subscribe to the podcast. But for now, I'm out of here. Peace.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Common Sense Show, hosted by Michael Logan. The producer for The Common Sense Show is Paul Logan. To reach out to Micah in The Common Sense Show, talk to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search The Common Sense Show. And if you enjoy the show, please don't forget to rate and or review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Thank you for listening.